It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Coffee and Football presented by Texas Electricity Ratings. I'm your host, Blake Monroe, where I'm joined each and every morning by Bobby Burton and Jerry Hamilton. Tell us where you're checking in from, what you're drinking. Obviously, get your questions in, and we're going to get to those here in just a little bit. We also have a special guest today, Eric Galco of the Shrine Bowl, joining us. We're going to talk about the Longhorns that were invited to the game, plus who they may be keeping their eye on. We got all that and more. But first, guys, a lot going on in the world of the portal and recruiting. Let's start with the portal first. What's the latest there?
Yeah, TCU transfer Dominic Williams is on campus at LSU. Got in, I think, yesterday afternoon, evening. Well, that visit will continue today. He'll either fly back to Fort Worth tonight or early a.m. Wednesday. A decision could come as early as Wednesday night here, or it could roll into later in the week, Thursday, Friday. But we do currently expect a decision this week by Dominic Williams, a top D lineman in the portal. Look, I think Oklahoma, Texas, LSU, Missouri, they're all still fighting in it. So we'll see what happens here. I mean, obviously, he has a big day at LSU coming, right? Those guys get in the evening, have a little dinner, but the big day of visits coming up today at LSU. So I think tonight, tomorrow, maybe we start to get a feel for who's getting cut out of it, maybe not officially cut out, but who this decision's actually going to come down to. It normally comes down to a couple of schools. Maybe there's four involved, but normally it comes down to a couple at the end of the day. So I think either late tonight, early tomorrow, maybe we hear who the actual two are. We'll see. Everybody's still swinging away at it. Everybody still thinks they have a chance. So we'll see what happens because the visit process is ongoing. Simeon Barrow, the D lineman out of Michigan State, it remains a possibility to visit this weekend. So we'll see what happens there. Derek Harmon also on the radar for Texas if Dominic Williams goes elsewhere. But the big thing would be if Texas were to get Dominic Williams, do they still attack any other D lineman in the portal? Simeon Barrow would be the guy in that scenario. So we'll see what happens. On corners, Bobby, nothing really new on our end. The portal closes tonight at 11:59 p.m. Does that mean you'll know for sure who's going in the portal, leaving Texas? Not necessarily, because there's a 48-hour window after that if anybody else jumps in. But that's pretty much where things are at. I think Texas has three or four corners that they're potentially looking at in the portal. I think more will come out on that later in the week outside of Tomorrow Davis.
I agree with you. I think that Texas is in a precarious situation because it has good players on campus. And Jerry, you mentioned it closes tonight. We got to worry about the outgoing portion of this scenario too, not just the incoming ones. While Texas has so far had eight guys enter the portal, pushing them down to 81 guys on scholarship right now, I get the sense that there are a couple that Longhorn fans, or not Longhorn fans, but Longhorn coaches even, are a little, I wouldn't say reticent, but just waiting to see if the other shoe actually drops. As of yesterday afternoon, the other shoe hadn't dropped, by the way, and so that's it. Checking in from Melk, Austria. There's a church in Melk, Austria I went to when I was like 20 years old, 21 years old, that was like the most beautiful church of all time. But what I was saying to you guys is this. There are a couple guys that as of last week, and I wrote this on OnTexasFootball.com this morning, there were a couple guys as of last week that were as good as gone from Texas. Period. End of story. Post interviews with Steve Sarkisian went well, and now you're wondering what's going on. One of them, another one, post interview with Steve Sarkisian didn't necessarily go the way he wanted it to, but still may be staying around because, you know, he may not have the options that he might have thought he did. So there's a number of different machinations or different ways going on right now that we can all kind of think about in our head. But we're waiting to see if anybody else from the Longhorns actually head elsewhere. There are some names out there. We're not going to put them out here right now, but they're not unlike the ones that we've heard about ourselves. So long story short, it is a big day in that regard. I am more concerned right now, frankly, with Dominic Williams, the late visit to LSU, combined with the fact that Oklahoma has been on him so hard. Jerry's here in Oklahoma, LSU, Texas, those three. The Sooners just aren't going away right now. And, you know, what does that mean? We'll see. I'm just
and Bobby, some people have added, have been asking about Missouri. Look, everybody's going to throw in their best NIL deal right now. We'll see what it comes down to for Dominic at the end of the day. Is it opportunity? Maybe somewhere where he thinks he's going to play 500 snaps versus 350 snaps, 400 snaps. Is it opportunity? Because everybody's going to have a good NIL package for Dominic Williams. He's going to do great in that regard wherever he goes. What's it actually going to come down to at the end of the day for him? Will be interesting.
Well, the portal's not the only recruiting going on. As high school coaches have been on the road here, including visiting a five-star prospect yesterday. Jerry, you had the scoop on that over on OnTexasFootball.com. But what's the latest there? Fill folks in on that and everything else that the coaches are doing.
Yeah, look, I mean, so Texas was on the road yesterday in the state of Florida. And one of the guys that is Dallas Wilson, five-star receiver from Tampa Tech. He's committed to Oregon, but he's going to visit Miami and Florida, and he's also got an official visit scheduled to Oregon. Texas offered him way back in September of 2023. Jeff Banks was at the school for 3 hours. It was at Tampa Tech for 3 hours yesterday, and you know, visited with the coaching staff, watched the practice. So Texas is trying to make a run here at Dallas Wilson, one of the very top receivers in the country, and he is a guy that I know Bobby saw the tape, he loved him as much as I did, but that's interesting because Jeff Banks and Kenny Baker were down in Port Charlotte yesterday to begin Monday. Meeting with Myron Charles and his mom, and then Banks made his way up to Tampa. So Texas also tried to recruit with DJ Pickett, a five-star safety out of Zephyr Hills. But Dallas Wilson here, one of the top receivers in the country. We'll see if Texas can get an official visit. The ideal dates for Texas aren't there, but this kid's so good, Bobby, you just try to get him to campus and see what happens, but he's one of the best players in the country.
I love him. I love his body control, Jerry, as much as anything. He's got some speed that can take it a little bit further than that. I gotta say this too, though. We're covering a bunch of football recruiting stuff going on right now, guys. The portal is open across all sports. We had a basketball commitment yesterday, Jerry. You'll talk about that. A basketball transfer from in women's basketball as well. I got to give you one that I did not expect to know, but his name will be brought up most likely at the Paris Olympics, and he's going to be a Longhorn. Bob Bowman Bowerman is the new swimming coach at the University of Texas, and he came in first or second in the swimming national championships at Arizona State. He just moved to Texas this off season follow up Eddie Reese's incredible tenure in Austin. Long story short, he just got a swimming commitment from a young man named Hubert Koss, K-O-S. Now, I wouldn't be mentioning a swimming commitment if it weren't something a little bit special. He was the world champion in the backstroke in 2023. He is the gold medal favorite in 2024 at the Paris Olympics, which are just 2 months away. And he is now officially a Texas Longhorn. I know that not everybody keeps up with the Olympics, et cetera, but love to see Longhorns represented on the global stage as well. He's originally from Hungary, by the way. Hubert Koss, now a Longhorn.
And by the way, I didn't mention, because we were talking about Dallas Wilson, receiver, but Kenny Baker saw Myron Charles and then was at O'Galley to see Brandon Brown for practice on Monday afternoon. Texas had, I believe, Kyle Flood was at IMG yesterday as well. Brett Colleger, the 2026 offensive lineman, one of the top guys in the country and a top target for Texas. He was on campus at Texas in April with his father. So Texas staff out and about. Tashard Choice scheduled to be at Calvary Baptist today to see James Simon, the four-star running back out of Shreveport. I believe Kenny Baker and Kyle Flutter both scheduled to be in the Atlanta area today as well. Obviously, Josh Petty, four-star offensive tackle. Then Juan Gaston, four-star offensive tackle from Atlanta Westlake. He's visiting June 14th through 16th, but Georgia's considered the favorite there. On D-line recruiting, there's a number of talented defensive linemen guys in the state of Georgia, a lot every year at this point. But I do think Kenny Baker, if what I was told yesterday, at Greene County in Greensboro, Georgia, Kenny Baker's expected by Tuesday afternoon, this afternoon, to see Kevin Wynn, the four-star defensive lineman from Greene County there in Greensboro, Georgia, who Texas has been trying to make a run at. I think FSU is ahead of Alabama right now. Georgia's probably third for Kevin Wynn, but a guy that's a, you know, around 50-foot shot putter, plays basketball, really good over-the-ball prospect. So Zion Williams, I think, is the number one over-the-ball prospect for Texas in this class, but Kevin Wynn is a guy that Texas would love to get on campus for an official visit. Really strong, plays low, wins the leverage game, naturally strong kid that once he becomes a one-sport guy at the next level has a chance to take off.
Jerry, he plays the way you're supposed to.
Yep.
Oh, that's a suplex move there.
Yeah. Look, he's got
good quickness. Down, baby.
He's got good quickness for 6'2", 320.
Oh, God. Right?
Barrel-chested, yeah. Big arms. I mean, he passes the eyeball test in person as well as the tape test.
Hey, we've got our special guest coming up here pretty quick. But first, I want to say thank you to our sponsor. Our sponsor is Texas Electricity Ratings. For those of y'all still living in Texas and in the major cities with deregulated electricity like Dallas and Houston, you understand that the deregulated electricity market can be confusing. It is to me. Texas Electricity Ratings is a shopping website that lets you compare prices, read customer reviews, and find a good electricity plan that fits your needs. It also filters out a lot of the gimmicky plans on websites like Power to Choose that trick customers into expensive bills. So check them out. If you're in the market for a new electricity plan, especially with summer coming up, shop TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF for all your electricity needs. And they say hook them to the folks at On Texas Football.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, guys. Well, as you said, Bobby, our special guest is here. I'm going to bring him in. Eric Galco, the director of football operations and player personnel for the Shrine Bowl. Shrine Bowl obviously had three Longhorns selected to it this past game. Eric, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on. As I'm in my car here, I feel like I'm on the McAfee show right now, so I appreciate your flexibility, guys.
Well, I got to be honest with you. Let Bobby ask Jerry's normal position. That's Jerry's normal position. In the car. He'll be in it next week down in Florida and Alabama and parts in between. So, Eric, thank you for coming aboard today, bud.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, we wanted to get your take on the 11 Longhorns drafted. Obviously, a move in the right direction for Steve Sarkisian and his program. You guys at the Shrine Bowl had three Longhorns there, as Blake mentioned, JT Sanders, Jonathan Brooks, and Ryan Watts. All three going in the draft. What was your takeaway from those three guys and maybe the Longhorns in general with this NFL draft?
Yeah, I'll start with the Longhorns in general. I think, you know, being at the program the last couple of years, especially, and seeing the personnel staff, the coaching staff, I mean, that program is just run in a way that they're going to have a pipeline for the future, right? It's very clear that Coach Sarkisian kind of saw what the process was at Alabama. I'll tell you, like, from NFL scouts love going to Texas, right? NFL scouts don't love going to teams because of great talent. They love going to schools because of how they take care of scouts and how they give good information and give good process. And Texas is one of those schools that you're going to go there. It's going to be efficient. You're talking to all the coaches you need to talk to and get a great sense of these players. On top of that, these guys are really talented guys too. But that's why I think you'll see, just like the Michigan program and Alabama program, like, you'll have the top end guys. But I think where Texas is going to really grow in terms of draft picks every year is those fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh guys, because NFL teams are just going to feel so comfortable with who they are as people and players as well too. And that was, in some parts, Ryan Watts, right? Certainly physically, athletically built the right way. But I think teams knew the character and knew how strong of a character guy he was and say, hey, this guy at worst is going to be a special teams ace who comes from a great program. And I think that's why Brooks and Sanders have the obvious talent, but guys like Ryan Watts and Mora, Texas, are going to come out of that program for the future.
Good stuff. You mentioned Jonathan Brooks and how important, I'd love to hear from somebody like yourself, how important are the interview sections of NFL draft? Jerry Jones, the Cowboys owner, said that Jonathan Brooks was the most impressive interview he's had in 30 years. Now, Jerry Jones is meant for hyperbole. We all know that. I mean, that's just who he is, right? He's had the most impressive for the last, every year, the last 30. But my point is, how important is that for NFL teams these days, that interview process, Eric?
It's huge. You know, I run an all-star game, and I always joke sometimes that the all-star game practices can be overrated sometimes as one who runs them, right? I really think the most important part for these players is the chance to just get, you know, be compared athletically to their peers on the field quickly, right? Get the NFL GMs have not seen these guys play in person, most likely even guys like Jonathan Brooks and JT Sanders. But then the interviews are so important, and it's because, you know, talent sets the ceiling. Your character and interviews set the floor as a player. And that's really important for a lot of players to kind of have that base on who they are. And JT Sanders, we'll get to him in a minute, I'm sure. You know, he's a guy that really benefited from the interviews at the Shrine Bowl. And Jonathan Brooks, the same thing. He met with 32 NFL teams, probably half the league's GMs, for about 20, 30 minutes at the Shrine Bowl alone, and then did the rest of the NFL Combine. That showed NFL teams that, hey, if the rehab checks out, which it was certainly on track to do so by then in January and February, and the talent, as we know it is on film, all that's left is the character piece. And that's why NFL teams knew, hey, when this guy's healthy, he's going to be a great locker room player. He's going to be able to handle third down, pass catching, pass blocking situations from a football IQ standpoint. And teams knew that, hey, this guy's going to be an NFL starter. The question only became then, okay, what's his final upside going to be? And when's his injury rehab going to be checked out? And those are the only two questions he had left in the draft process after the Shrine Bowl and Combine, because the interviews are so important for him.
Eric, you had a play that you put up on Twitter of Jonathan Brooks that our Blake Monroe has queued up here. Tell us, run us through this. I don't know if you can quite see it, but it's a play you remarked about with Jonathan Brooks, about him and saying he wasn't quite Bijan Robinson, not that many people are, but he's still plenty good. And what did you see here that made you excited about him as a player?
Yeah, the two things in this play, the very beginning, you see him, hey, he's decisive as he gets in the top of the hole, right? He's someone who's going to press the hole and go up in the middle and say, hey, get to the line of scrimmage and let me see what I got here too. Sometimes you see guys who dance a little bit or a little less patient and say, hey, I have good offensive line, I'm going to trust them, make this play here. But the real trick here is that first step after the hole, right? That ability to stay balanced, explode, and get upfield. That's something we see some one-cut guys have, but is it a guy like Jonathan Brooks who can do two cuts? He can make guys miss after getting through the hole as well, too. That's what I think makes him really special. It's made Bijan so dynamic and special, too, and that's why Brooks, again, is not far off from Bijan Robinson as a prospect overall.
Hey, Eric, thanks for joining us, and you and I maybe we'll get together and talk Villanova basketball on another time. Because I know you, I know you graduated from Villanova. How early do you start the process for next year, and how extensive is that? Do y'all have a board of how many guys, and how do y'all kind of get that down to your number?
Yeah, we've got a great scouting staff, and they've been working on the 2025 draft since January, since before the Shrine Bowl even ended. So I like that. I learned the last couple of years now, I like to stay laser focused on the 2024 draft class. So I joke all the time with my staff, like all the guys in next year's draft feel like made up creative players on Madden. Like I've never heard any of them. That's obviously a little facetious too, But we've got our board already built. We are, you know, probably 90% of the way there done for next year's draft class. I know Texas has a whole bunch of players. They got two more running backs. I know CJ Baxter is one that jumps out right away, right? The receivers, Isaiah Bond, certainly Quinn Ewers is the guy we've known for a long, long time. Got a chance to be with him and his family this past offseason too. So plenty of talent at Texas, but thankfully, you know, probably like this week, I'll meet with our staff and kind of play catch up a little bit too. But thankfully our board's built and we've got about 700 injured players ranked, graded, evaluated for next year's draft class already.
Eric, you're running these things, and I'm interested because I actually helped, and Jerry did too, help fill out rosters for a high school football game.
Yeah.
Game, right? You're doing it at the college level, some similarity there. And you don't always get your first picks, right? No one does. That's the way of the world. How do you kind of manage that process where you're waiting for somebody to choose between you and another game before you put out another invite, et cetera? How do you handle that personally?
It sounds altruistic, but I really try to make sure that I'm laser focused on player happiness, enjoyment, and success and that piece of it. And what I mean by that is that I can be frustrated about a player's decision, but if I'm like, you know what, that guy may have done what's best for him, right? Some guys don't play in all-star games, right? And I can be mad and spiteful and curse out the agent and be mad at that player and drop him in my rankings for no other reason, right? But I don't want to do that because I want to be appreciative that players have a lot of tough choices to make and a lot of decisions to make as well, whether which all-star game they go to or not at all as well. And I think that's treated us well the last couple of years. More and more guys like Jonathan Brooks have said, you know what, I got an invite from the Shrine Bowl, then I got hurt, and they're not revoking their invite, and I want to go there and be a part of it. And that's something that I think we didn't have a couple of years ago, that now that players still appreciate that piece of it too. And for us, it's about kind of roster building, next man up, and not getting discouraged, because you're right. As running an all-star game, you're like, we got four quarterbacks. Oh, that guy's pulling out. God. And then you got to keep moving forward. But for us, it's a lot of being organized, being prepared. I lean a lot on our scouting staff to tell me who the best players are, and that way I could be more of the strategy, talking with agents, talking with players more consistently. So I may be in the weeds, but they can be really objective and say, hey, you know what, you lost this guy, cool, next guy up is this player, let's keep moving forward.
Eric, one other question I had for you. A lot was made this offseason about this draft not being as deep as other drafts. Is that a take that you necessarily agree with, or is that something that you're just that you think may be a little bit overrated?
You know, I think the better way to think of it is there were fewer players this year that could become good NFL players, right? Like every team's got different boards, and we always hear that, right? But usually every year there's maybe, let's say, 500 players that could be drafted or could be high PFAs, and this year was only 350. So there were still 255 plus good players that were drafted. But I think teams, A, saw boards pretty similarly this year, meaning that, hey, there wasn't going to be a lot of discrepancy between teams. And also teams made other arrangements, right? The Philadelphia Eagles said it, like they signed a lot of players off practice squads of other teams at the end of last year, knowing it was going to be the case, right? The Arizona Cardinals have three PFAs, right? Which is usually every team has 7, 8, 9, 10, they have three, right? Some teams opted to trade back and collect multiple fifth, sixth round picks to draft more guys before the seventh round. Some teams just said, cool, we'll take your next year's picks and we'll figure out later too. So I think every team was prepared for that and had different strategies on how to handle it. But I would say it was, again, I think collectively weaker. There wasn't as many depth of good players, but this is not going to be like some all-time historical bad draft. There was plenty of talent at the top of the draft. We got six quarterbacks. Some of them have to work out at least, right? I know quarterbacks have a low hit rate these days, but some of those guys have to work out. I think we'll look back at this draft class and kind of forget that it wasn't viewed as very deep. But I think it was maybe a tougher challenge for NFL teams to not screw up those fifth, sixth, seventh round picks because there's maybe a smaller margin of error.
Hey, Eric, we've had a number of people on, and we have over 2,000 people on right now. So a lot of people are asking, what are your thoughts, y'all's evaluation early on Quinn Ewers, because obviously he's the name for Texas fans heading in the next season, and he's going to be in all the mock drafts, him and Kelvin Banks in the first round.
Yeah, I think Quinn Ewers has a chance to be a special quarterback. It's always hard for quarterbacks, I think, at big programs who have big expectations early on because they don't get the chance, perception-wise, to grow, right? And there were certainly throws this year that I think Quinn will tell you he'd love back, even throws that were completed to Xavier Worthy, A.D. Mitchell, that, like, hey, I wasn't placed that perfectly. But that's not who he is. He's still growing and developing as a quarterback. And I think he'll make, I know he's going to make big strides this year that I think people are going to forget that maybe, oh man, I guess he was just okay last year. Like, no. He's going to be, I think, a dynamic quarterback this year. I think the ball placement's going to be even better. And the downfield touch, those are two areas I think he wanted to work on this offseason, and they'll both be much better. And I've already seen about, oh, how next year's quarterback class is not going to be good. It feels like every year, next year's class is either the best class ever or the worst class ever.
Yeah.
And I think next year is going to be just fine, from Shadur to Drew Allar to Carson Beck to a couple other guys, and Quinn is definitely in that category too. So I think Texas fans should be incredibly bullish on Quinn, and for how good he was last year, production-wise and in big games, and how much room he has to still get better. Like, that's what excites you as a scout, is saying, hey, this guy's already okay and he can get so much better. You can't beat that in terms of evaluation.
Hey, Eric, I know you guys have your scouting group that puts together, you said 700 guys on the board. My question is, okay, when y'all talk to Steve Sarkisian or, you know, whoever the coach is, do they sell you on their guys, or are they just more making sure that y'all know who the guys that they think y'all should be looking at are? I mean, is there a sales process from these coaches?
Yeah.
Or at that level, is it beyond that?
It's a great question, because it's very different by school, right? There are some schools that I won't name that really try to sell you on guys, and that can work for a year or two, but if those guys don't work out, then that coach loses all credibility, and that's not Coach Sark. You talk to Coach Sark, and really coach that Texas program, and they're going to give you the honest truth on guys, not negative, not, you know, both positive and negatives, but they're going to give you the honest truth of who that guy is and may be. You know, there was some honest feedback about the pros and cons of, like, Tavondre Sweat, who's a great kid and a great person and had to go through some stuff, and they weren't negative about him. But I think as a scout, you feel comfortable. You know, sometimes we think of character and that piece of who a player is in terms of just positives and negatives. All you're doing is building a depth of who this guy is, right? If I just really know who Tavondre Sweat, who had some documented, I think, questions teams had too, but the Tennessee Titans, I think, took him, right? They felt very comfortable. They knew exactly who he is. And if you know who a person is, you can make anything work with them. And that's what the Texas program does a great job of, is they can give you a really clean idea of who this player is and who they can be as a person and who they can be when they reach the NFL. And they do a great job of that, from Coach Sark all the way down. Other programs, not so much. I can't trust that head coach. I can't trust that guy. He's not going to give me good information too. And again, that just creates questions in the draft process that players sometimes have to answer unfairly.
The one follow-up I had, because we've had some questions about, the 700 number maybe that you guys are looking at. That's not just an upperclassman. That's like sophomores that are going to be juniors, right? That's like guys who could be draft eligible.
That's everybody. By the Shrine Bowl, we'll have about 3,000 players written up, evaluated, all that stuff, right? So right now, 700 is probably what we feel comfortable with too, right? But that's going to keep growing and growing. Includes underclassmen. All-star games can have underclassmen. And plus, we also work with NFL teams and share notes, right? We want to make sure we know every single player in the country.
Yeah. All right, Eric, before we let you get out of here, and thanks again for joining us, but tell folks out there about the Shrine Bowl. Obviously, y'all had a big year this year. 57 players drafted, the most in Shrine Bowl history. But plug the game for everybody that may not be familiar with it.
The game's been on for 99 years. And about 20 years ago, the Shrine Bowl was on CBS and Fox at the same time. And that's how big of an event this was about 20, 25 years ago. And it kind of just, you know, wasn't at the same level for a while too. And some other competitors, I think, did a great job in taking advantage. But I was hired 3 years ago to kind of make this a best in class event. And over the last 3 years, we've grown in draft picks. What I'm most proud of is, I think players, NFL scouts, agents will tell you, media especially too, will tell you, hey, as a player, you're going to get taken care of. As an agent, your player's going to be healthy. As an NFL team, meet with every single player for a half hour. As a media organization, you're going to get 30, 40 minutes with Jonathan Brooks, with JT Sanders in a live setting as well too. And we focus on a best-in-class opportunity that's made the event great. And next year is our 100th anniversary game, 100 years of the East-West Shrine Bowl. We're going to have a huge centennial celebration too, and hopefully have much more than 57 draft picks again next year too.
Where is it located? I got two more questions before we let you go. Where is the East West Shrine Bowl going to be next year? Number one. Number two, what kind of coffee are you drinking there? I noticed you're a coffee drinker.
I am.
We gotta ask.
Coffee wise, it's Panera. I think I'm running errands here today, so I'll do a Panera shout out. Not my favorite. I'm usually a cafe kind of guy. I like local place for a cup of coffee. And second, the Shrine Bowl is in Frisco, Texas, where the star this past year will be in Texas for the Future. And it's great to have a partner like the Jones family for an event like this. They are they're great to work with, and they are all in, as Jerry Jones would say, for the Shrine Bowl. So I appreciate it.
Good stuff. Thank you so much, Eric, and have a good one, man.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you, buddy. Yeah. Good stuff.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
By the way, that is much more extensive than I thought it was going to be as far as how many guys they already have on a board. I was thinking it was going to say 200, 300 guys right now. But 700 guys already on a board right after the 24 draft concludes, before, you know, before they really get spring practice reports from some of these college staffs as well. So that is a lot more than I thought he was going to say.
I got to say this real quick too, Jerry. Think about the value of the portal in that. Like, if you were a college team and you had access to that data from a portal perspective, you would maybe know which cornerback to go after or which ones to prioritize potentially.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. By the way, speaking of prioritizing, I need to tell you about South Point Dodge, okay? Hey, Texas football fans, score an easy extra point this season when you get to that point at South Point Dodge. South Point Dodge has over 600 vehicles in stock, and their award-winning sales staff doesn't do games or gimmicks. They just get straight to the point by getting you the best deal. Over tackle, as we call it, right? So score big today at South Point Dodge. Come see us off I-35 in South Austin or at southpointdodge.com. Get to the point at South Point Dodge. Hey, you never know. Maybe I'll drive a South Point Dodge up to the Shrine Bowl next year.
Love it, Jerry. Hey, you, Eric. Eric was your Ken there in the car. You had you're gonna be in that car next week.
That really got me excited about my trip to Florida next week. So I'm gonna. As somebody asked who I'm gonna scout in person in May. You know, look, it looks like my first trip as of right now. My first stop will be Jamie French at Mandarin on Monday. So we'll see. I mean, I may hit a couple of schools before Mandarin that day. We'll see on that. See some younger kids in the Jacksonville area. But next week will be a big week on the road. Jamie French, Derry Norris, Brandon Brown, Myron Charles, may swing down, see Dia Bell, the 26th quarterback at American Heritage. May go see Dallas Wilson at Tampa Tech. So it's a full, and a couple others as well, some schools that I'm not going to mention right now. But it's a full week on the road in the Sunshine State. And the great thing about all those trips is all you see is palm trees.
Palm trees and alligators crossing the highway.
Look, if I see the alligators, I'm at the wrong practice field. That means I'm at the golf course.
All right, guys. Well, let's get back into some Texas talk here. Obviously, we talked about high school recruiting. We talked about the portal, but a couple of commits for Texas men and women's basketball yesterday. Jerry, what's the latest there? Tell folks about it in case they missed it.
Yeah, Texas took Malik Presley, who's originally from San Marcos High. He played a year at Vanderbilt, 6'6 left-handed guards. Texas got a couple of 6'6 left-handed guards out of the portal. But he's a guy who, you know, Texas tinkered with being done at guard. Then when Malik Presley became a possibility, I think they thought the upside there, maybe not next year so much, but the years following, he's got a chance to be a good player for Texas. He started five games as a freshman for Vanderbilt, didn't put up big numbers on that team, but started five games, a really good finisher in the paint, pretty crafty with the basketball. Obviously freshman, he's going to make jumps in the next couple of years, really shooting the basketball, free throw line, 3-point line. It's going to be big for him, his maturation as a player, but a kid who plays hard. This is a kid that, when Chris Beard and the original Texas staff there, they took a hard look at him. They were calling it stash and develop at the time. They looked at him as one of those guys coming out of high school, but then he had opportunities to go somewhere and play and not take a development year, and he went that route. But good player, good addition to Texas. Texas is going to play three guards the vast majority of the time next year. Kind of think Miami Hurricanes, that Final Four team. And I said this when Frank Haith came on staff. That's pretty much, I thought, what Texas would morph into. And I think you're seeing them in this portal class kind of go in that direction. Texas still, they're not. Look, Brandon Garrison, the Oklahoma State transfer, the big man, I think he may decide today. Texas and Brandon Garrison are not getting married. I don't think that one was going to end up working out after the visit. So I think Brandon Garrison will probably end up at Oklahoma, maybe Oklahoma State. He goes back. But he's got some family stuff there as well that may be better for him to be close. He visited Arkansas, but Arkansas took Adu from Tennessee, so I'm not sure that's a fit either. But Texas is looking for a rebounder and a guy that can wall up and play defense in the paint as a big man, but it's going to be more of a role player. So it's good. The expectations are going to be key there for Texas. So we'll see. We'll see. They got a couple of guys there that I think they think are good fits. But Texas is going to be very, very guard heavy, very, very guard driven this next year and in the future. And basketball, women's.
Yeah, don't forget about the women.
Yeah, picked up a 6'6 post player transfer from Miami. There you go, right there. There's a picture of her and Vic. And she does look about 8 inches taller. Sorry, Coach Schaefer. She looks about half a foot taller than you are. But look, she was a McDonald's All-American in 2022. Went to Miami. She played what it was to say there 54 games. Made 21 starts last season. So she started a little bit more than half the games. I think she averaged 6.5 points, 5.5 rebounds in that area. With a couple of girls already transferring out of Texas at Power Forward Center. It was big to come in and get an experienced player to go with all those really good guards and returning players that Texas is going to have next year. By the way, for the whoever follows women's here on the chat, I think UConn, USC, Texas, and South Carolina will be ranked up there. But I think those are going to be your four teams preseason. USC's really loaded up out west. People aren't talking about it because it's girls basketball, but watch out for USC next year.
All right. Well, it is time now to take some questions, and we actually have a few super chats that we need to knock out. Let's start with this first one here from Billy Bird. Thank you, Billy. He says, congrats on the Longhorns, and his son graduates from Texas in May. So congratulations to you, Billy. That's awesome. You
will never regret that degree, Billy. Never, ever, ever. I can say that personally.
And then Jay Lee with the super chat. Thank you, Jay. No stranger to super chat yourself. He says, I tend to be skeptical of NIL numbers. How much do you actually think guys like JT, Mitchell, and Worthy were making at Texas per year?
You know, I think that they're all different levels. I think that Worthy was probably the higher end of that. And I think it's into the hundreds of thousands of dollars. I really do. Based on what I know, I think that that's just the reality of it. If you're an elite player at Texas, you're going to be taken care of. And all three of those guys, elite players at Texas.
And then one other super chat from another person that's no stranger to super chats, Jack. Thank you, Jack. He says, Jerry, Justin Wells from Inside Texas reported yesterday that Michael Fasusi texted while on his official visit to Colorado. Wow, 11 drafted.
You know, look, I think Texas is in a very good spot for Michael Fasusi. I think A&M's making a big run at it. They know how important offensive line is in the 25 class, and I think OU's swinging away. But I'm not sure Oklahoma has as much confidence at the end of the day as Texas does right now. So I think Texas is in a good spot for Fasusi, and this will go through the June official visit process. But I think Texas likes where they sit. We'll see where it ends up.
Hey, Jerry, can you kind of reset the offensive line group right now? Because we had some 2 weeks ago, we had Jackson Christian make a back-to-back visit on a Saturday, then come back on a Tuesday. We had some other movement as far as potential commitments / whatever. Just reset the offensive line board for folks in a very macro view for 2025, because I think it's very clouded right now because there's a lot of elite players like Fasusi and Lamont, all these guys, the Coleman twins are two of the three triplets. It's very interesting to me how they're going to play this because it almost seems like musical chairs. I mean, which guys fit which pieces of the puzzle?
Yeah, so it's a good question. I think Texas could take six. They're going to take five for sure. They could take six in this class after only taking three last year. And I don't think that would be bad at all because it's a tremendous year in state in Texas. Some people say it in every year, but yeah, not some position years are better than others. So this is a very strong class. in 2026 or 2025 in the state of Texas. Look, I think Fasusi and Lamont Rogers in state are the offensive tackles. And I think, obviously, I just went over Fasusi. I think Lamont Rogers, Texas, LSU, I think, is the team to watch. He's got the official visit to A&M as well. But he's originally from Mississippi. His father still lives in Mississippi. Him and his mom live in Dallas. So I think LSU is going to be a player for Lamont Rogers. I also think A&M's a player. So then you have John Mills, who was on our on Texas Football Channel a few days ago. Great interview. One of the best we've had from a player standpoint. He could be a swing player. He could play tackle. He could play guard. Not out of the question he plays tackle at the next level. I think Texas is in a good spot there. Over Washington right now. He just visited Nebraska last weekend. John Mills, we're talking about, out of St. Ignatius in San Francisco, four-star prospect for on Texas football. Everybody else has him underrated. He'll visit Cal, visit Florida, and he'll visit Washington before his official visit to Texas. Jackson Christian's an interesting one to me. This is an A&M Texas battle out of Port Neches Groves. I think there's a little A&M push around there for him. I think the Texas football standpoint, I think, is good for Jackson Christian. He's one guy that I think I could see moving off a timeline. I'm not sure he goes to late June. Right now he's got A&M June 14th through 16th and Texas 21st through 23rd. I'm not sure his decision goes that long. I could see something mid to late May there with him. So some of these guys are going to move off their timeline. Then there's Jordan and Devin Coleman. Obviously, Devin Coleman could be a guard or center, and I think he's very good at either. Jordan Coleman, a guard that could play some swing tackle, but probably guard long-term. Those are guys that right now I think Texas, it feels like they have 50-50 shots with or better. Then you have the wild cards. Nick Brooks from Iowa was on campus from JFK High in Cedar Rapids, was on campus for the spring game. He's coming back in June for an official visit. I think Georgia and Texas are the top two there. Iowa facing an uphill battle to keep him home from an NIL standpoint, I think, especially with what Caden Proctor did. USC also trying to swing away there. Those are the four schools that get official visits. We'll see if Georgia can close him out on that May 31st, June 2nd official visit. There's nine guys scheduled for official visits right now. Josh Petty, which I believe Kyle Flood's there today in the Atlanta area, Roswell, Georgia. He's the athletic wrestler slash offensive tackle. We'll see if Texas schedules a June official visit with him. I think this visit today by Kyle Flood will be very telling there, because every offensive lineman Texas is targeting is either visiting June 14th through 16th or 21st through 23rd. Josh Petty has visits scheduled those weekends right now. So we'll see if anything happens there. But I think Texas will take five or even six in this class.
You mentioned the Coleman brothers too. One, Devin and Jordan, they're in there. I mean, I'm just looking at it. It looks like there's 12 guys. And you mentioned Flood was at the IMG yesterday.
Yeah.
There's 12 guys clearly in the mix, five to six spots, and Texas sits at 50% or better for 10 of them. I mean, that's what I meant by musical chairs. There's going to be a domino effect here. I don't know. And I'm trying to get a sense, and you know as well as I do, Jerry, we do this a lot. You're trying to get a sense of how everything's going to break. And right now, I just don't have a good feeling for how things are going to break. I think it's going to be okay, and Texas is going to be in good shape.
Oh, yeah.
It's just how does this break?
And that's
what I'm trying to figure out right
now. Hey, Britt Rasko's, I'm on board with this, by the way. Yeah, that's why I said I think he's going to move off a June timeline. I think you could see a mid-May announcement from Jackson Christian. I think Britt's on to something there. By the way, somebody saying Josh Petty is Georgia-bound if they push. Potentially, Tennessee fan, some big Tennessee fans in that family too. We'll see where his sister ends up going to college as well.
Jerry, let's do a reset. We're about 40 minutes through this. Talk to us about the portal, Dominic Williams, the Texas players that may or may not go into the portal, etc.
Yeah, so Dominic Williams, the TCU transfer defensive lineman, the top D lineman on the board for, Oklahoma, Texas, Missouri, and LSU. He's on a visit to LSU, first full day. It's kind of like the Texas visit. He got in on an evening, had a little dinner, but then the full day is today, that following day. Then he'll fly home either late tonight or early Wednesday morning. not out of the question to me that some of the schools try to meet with him, not LSU, the other schools try to meet with him Wednesday ahead of a Wednesday night decision. If he does that Wednesday night or Thursday decision, that decision is expected the later half of this week. We'll see. You know, there's a lot. I've been told Wednesday night decision. We'll see if that holds. Could it bump back to Thursday? We'll see. And look, everybody's swinging away. Everybody's going to have really good NIL deals for him. I think it's going to come down to what it could come down to for Dominic. And it'll be interesting to see what Dominic has to say. Does he feel like there's a better just opportunity somewhere else other than Texas? We'll find out. You know, Oklahoma's looking at potentially starting two freshmen, right? LSU may not have. They have a bunch of guys go to the NFL draft. So we'll see what this decision actually comes down to for Dominic Williams. But everybody's swinging away. Everybody's giving it their best shot. Texas may also bring in Simeon Barrow from Michigan State this weekend. He's more of a three technique type of player, very productive player. He'll be a late round draft pick after next season. I think Texas could bring him in as well. The corner, you know, Takario Davis, still the top guy. We'll see. You know, just how serious that gets here. I would think later half of last part of the week, we'll hear a lot more on the corner position. So that's it. Bobby, guys have until 11:59 tonight. If you're a Texas player, to put your name into the portal, we'll see what comes of that. There's been a few guys jump in the portal nationally that are interesting, maybe not even for Texas necessarily, but just interesting names of late. The corner from Ole Miss jumped in the portal, and he could go right back to Michigan, and Marion Walker. So we'll see on that.
And we have a few folks asking this. As you said, the portal closes tonight. But tell folks the process. They have whenever.
Yeah, you don't have to commit until you show up on campus.
Yeah.
I mean, you could show up on campus in August. As long as you enter the portal and get your transfer paperwork in, and actually are accepted to that school, you can start school whenever. Obviously, most of these guys are going to try to commit by the first opportunity within the summer session. So they'll be able to get two summer sessions in for schoolwork as well as working out with the team. So I think May 31st, that area will be the final timeline of people making decisions. Dominic Williams in particular, Jerry has mentioned this, is aiming towards a Wednesday, Thursday announcement, according to his representative behind the scenes. So that's where we're looking at with that. But otherwise, they have till May, and till mid to late May to make a decision. I think some will take their time and make further visits, et cetera. One last thing I do want to mention as far as Texas players potentially leaving. So last week we heard actually three different guys that were likely to leave. Two of them had told people they were likely to leave. Two of those three have since said, I think I'm staying. So we are monitoring this. We've been told that before on a player that has entered the portal. He was leaving, then staying, and then he ended up leaving. So before we get out there and put names out there, et cetera, and report on this, we have to take into consideration the ebbs and flows of what this all is. I mean, these are huge decisions for these kids. And basically, since I am seeing it go back and forth so much, I don't feel comfortable sitting here saying, well, this guy's telling people he's going to the portal. This guy doesn't, because it could change in the next hour. And I've seen it too much. So we're not going to put names out there, but there are a couple of what I consider really talented players that were contemplating it late last week. As of late yesterday, I do not believe there's either of those guys have actually entered any paperwork to the portal. So that's where it's at right now.
Hey, we've had a few Jakeem Stewart, the 2026 D lineman out of St. Aug in New Orleans, which St. Augustine, one of the top talent producers in the country. But over time, or Leonard Fournette, Tyrann Mathieu, a number of other guys played. I just wanted to say this on Jakeem. I've been down to St. Aug. I went during the season and saw him. And I know people have, and he's a very good prospect, but I just want to say this. Some people have him ranked number one. I don't think he's going to end number one. I think he's a very good prospect. I don't think we're talking about a generational type of talent here. I think he's a very good player, and I'm not saying anything negative about Jakeem, but I am going to give my real opinion here. I think he's very good. We aren't talking Miles Garrett, Jadeveon Clowney, anything like that here. I mean, he's a very good player. Is he all LSU? We'll find out. Look, recruiting in New Orleans is a different animal than recruiting in North along I-20, especially a guy that's highly ranked like that. So we'll see what happens. There's been some questions if he was going to try to reclass to 2025. That would be more of a process if he went that direction. But I'll say this, very good player. Is he Jadeveon Clowney? And I know he's interior, but I'm talking top D linemen who are ranked number one in the class. Miles Garrett, people like that. He's not that level.
I guess we have another super chat here. This one from Just the Dude. Thank you, Just the Dude. And he says, what's the most real wide receiver pool for the class? Moore, French, Lockett, and Johnson? Jerry, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so, I mean, you can bring up that Dallas Wilson tape again yesterday from earlier today from Huddle, because it's interesting that Texas is continuing to recruit a few receivers nationally on top of these guys we know already. Look, DeCorian Moore, he has a spot until December, but he'll make a final decision, I think July, August, before the season. He'll go through his visit process. He'll go see Oregon. He's going to make the official visits, and it'll be a battle. It should be a battle. He's a great player at wide receiver, in my estimation. Then I think, look, French, he will visit June 21st through 23rd. The question is, where is Ohio State with him currently versus where were they with him 2 months ago? I think that's what's interesting. I think Tennessee and Texas are right there for Jamie French. Ohio State, he doesn't have an official visit scheduled to right now. He has Tennessee and Texas. I'll be out to see him next week. I think Kelshon Johnson continues to be a Texas lean. The question is, and I think Texas has a legit shot at Lockett. Question is a 3 or 4 man class? That's gone back and forth. If it ends up being a 4 man class, then that adds a very, very important piece. A very important place at wide receiver. So that's the big question. Is it going to be 3 or 4? I think I'm leaning the 4 right now, but that's subject to change. But again, I want to mention, yes, Dallas Wilson is still committed to Oregon, has official visits scheduled to Miami, Florida, and Oregon. Jeff Banks was at the school for about 3 hours yesterday at Tampa Tech there, and he's a gamer. Throw out the track speed. The guy's just he has football speed, great agility, great balance, great body control. I mean, he's one of the top 25, 30 prospects in the country in this class, in my estimation.
So Tampa Tech, same high school as Michael Penix, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. Tampa Tech, you know, if state of Florida is interested in the public school, everything moves around every few years, right? It was Armwood for years. Armwood's not as strong. They aren't getting as many kids up there as they once did. Things move around a little bit in the state of Florida. It's kind of the wild, wild west in high school football in the public schools. But Tampa Tech is a school that produces 3-4 type Power 5 guys on an annual basis. And somebody's asking about punter. We do think Texas is considering a punter out of the portal.
There you go. This next question, fellas, is going to come from King Me. We'll talk a team-related question here. And he says, how would you describe Sark's first year in the SEC? Is it a rebuild or a reload?
Well, I think Texas fans hope it's reload. I don't think there's any doubt. And it's hard to say you're reloading, even with 11 draft picks. It's hard to say you're reloading when you're bringing back your quarterback as a third-year starter. And so I think reloading is more familiar term, since you actually have 3 new receivers. And you have the same quarterback. You have 2 of the 3 top running backs. You've got another tight end coming in that actually projects to go higher in a draft than the one that you just lost did. The question is, will they reload at every position? I don't think they're going to get there at defensive tackle right now, if I'm betting. I just don't think they get there. But we'll see how it goes. I feel good about where Texas is at, and I think it's definitely a reload situation. The question I will have ultimately is, how much more difficult is this schedule? How much more does it beat on your body to play a Mississippi State in Kentucky as compared to a, no offense, but to a Kansas and a Texas Tech?
I'm going to say this, and I'm going to be very just real about this. There is no more rebuilds at Blue Bloods in the portal day and age. If you're any coach steps in front of the mic and says, hey, it's a rebuilding year, you got the wrong coach. Period. There's no rebuilds anymore at Blue Blood schools in the transfer portal. If your coach is saying, hey, we're inexperienced this year, you got the wrong coach, guys. Shouldn't happen. No excuse for it. It's reload every year in the portal for Blue Bloods. No doubt about it. I think Texas could have 12 guys drafted next year. Not out of the question.
Crazy. Phil wants to know, does Texas penchant for high rotation on the defensive line in game change any thoughts from potentially incoming players?
They do a heavy rotation, but it wasn't crazy from what other teams do last year. I mean, Sweat had 400 and something snaps. Byron Murphy, high 300s. Backups had around low 300s, high 200s. And that's Collins and Broughton. My take on it is that's just normal. I mean, no defensive tackle plays every down anymore. That just doesn't happen. And so there's going to be a level of rotation there. I don't think it hurts. I think Jerry's point is that, hey, some teams are making sure that everybody knows Texas's situation with the two guys they brought in via the transfer portal right now. And that's not just Oklahoma or LSU or Missouri. All three of them are making sure people know that Texas already brought in two defensive tackles. So on top of Alfred Collins coming back, et cetera. So that is where that situation sits right now. I don't think that it's hurting that way. I think that somebody gets it in their mind, it's hard to overcome it. And that's where Texas may be sitting right now with Dominic Williams.
Well, we're going to keep talking about defensive tackle here for a moment, guys, as we have a couple of questions and comments on that. This first one from Osmosis Jones. What are you guys hearing about Alfred Collins and how he's coming along?
Well, I've heard he's been better. He obviously had the interception return for a touchdown, but we did not see him much in the spring game. I mean, so to say really that we know this is happening, but I think that everybody expects him to be a draft pick next year. The question we all have is, how is he going to play the run? He's going to play against bigger guys this year. So he's going to be forced to be bigger against the run from a three technique. I don't know. Is the final answer. I wish we could sit here and say, oh, he's having a great offseason. I haven't necessarily heard that he's having a great or a bad offseason, either one.
And then Zane Petty says, Bobby, I don't think you give Broughton, AB, Savea, Norton, Bryant enough credit. That is five guys, not counting January and Sadir Mitchell. That is seven guys. He thinks that we are fine at defensive tackle. Your thoughts?
Zane, I think Steve Sarkisian disagreed with you, not me. He's the one out there recruiting other guys, not me. That's the point that I would make there. Fine is not, and I also would say this, fine's not the goal, right? If fine were the goal, 8-4 would be the goal. I don't think that's what Steve Sarkisian is shooting for, guys. He's shooting for elite across the board.
Before we move on, Bobby, can you tell folks out there about Texas Electricity Ratings?
Yeah, absolutely. Our friends at Texas Electricity Ratings, for anyone shopping for electricity in the deregulated areas of Texas, prior to the summer coming along, God knows everybody getting ready for that. TexasElectricityRatings.com is the best place to find a great electricity plan for your household. For starters, it filters out the dangerous and gimmicky plans from providers that are all hat and no cattle when it comes to your monthly bill. You can shop by rate, but also by an average bill feature that actually takes into account seasonal usage to give you a real number and not some placeholder. So if you're looking for a new electricity plan, check out TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF for the best options available. Hook them, and thank you for your sponsorship of every Tuesday's Coffee and Football.
Okay, guys. We had a question earlier, Blake, and we didn't get to. Yeah. Somebody asked if I thought De'Andre Robinson would have been an impact player.
Yes.
Yeah, look, a freshman defensive lineman, play snaps probably. Impact guy, no, I don't see Tommy Harris there, right? I didn't see that in De'Andre Robinson. A lot of it's up to De'Andre, though. DeAndre can legitimately can be as good as he wants to be. And you, some people say, well, you could say that for anybody. No, there's levels to it. DeAndre could be a high draft pick if he wants to be. He's a very talented kid. But impact freshman D lineman. I mean, look, Alex January will play a little bit, right? He's not going to play 300 snaps next year. And DeAndre Robinson would have been in that similar boat at a three tech position for Texas. So would he have got on the field? Will he get on the field at Florida? He should. If he doesn't, he didn't work hard. He didn't care about his development in year one because he's too talented to sit and watch. I'll say that. But where he ultimately goes is totally up to him. But if he wants to get there, that dude's talented.
Okay, guys, time for some more questions here. Plenty of time to get some more questions in. And let's talk about this. Freddie says, should we be worried about portal defensive tackle and defensive back not trending up? Feels like Williams is headed elsewhere. I'll get it right here in a second. And defensive back search is on plan C.
I don't know if it's on plan C. They haven't really pushed in the portal as yet in defensive back particularly because they didn't lose Terrence Brooks until last week. So you got to remember it's only been a week. That's number one. So I take it. So let's disregard what let's say that that's been addressed, the defensive back. As far as the defensive line situation, I do think it's getting to a situation where they want guys that can make an impact right now. And there are that list is few and far between. That's just the reality of it. So I feel like we're going to have to wait and see what happens with Williams. I do believe that he's going to return from LSU. I think Texas and OU are probably still going to try to have one more say here yep. before he makes a decision. But, you know, we're waiting to see just like everybody else. It sounds like Oklahoma and LSU have both made pushes much harder than Missouri. And I know people are saying Missouri, et cetera, but Oklahoma and LSU are the ones that I think Texas needs to be concerned with at this point.
And I want to say that, look, the plan is to announce Wednesday night, right? That's been the plan. We had reported that last week that was a likely date. Wednesday or late in the week, they want to have a decision by Wednesday night. Could things change? Always can change, but that's the plan.
All right, guys, our next question here. We've talked about portal guys coming in. Champ Bailey wants to talk about Terrence Brooks, who recently is going out. He says, I'm hearing University of Texas San Antonio is in the lead for Terrence Brooks. Do you think this is true? And why do you feel like he would go down in competition?
If that's the case, then I think it's a clear, you know, UTSA and all your credits transfer from Texas to UTSA.
Yep.
That would be a real primary reason for that. And it's a clear path to the football field for it.
And any given Saturday, sorry, I didn't see the super chat. I know we just talked about this and we've talked about it throughout the broadcast. Any news on contact with Dakario Davis? And thank you for the super chat.
As of right now, there is no new news. He participated in Saturday's spring game with Arizona. He has been in the portal since January. So this is a ongoing saga. It was one time thought that he was going to end up at Oklahoma when he entered the portal, Jerry. I mean, just a clear discussion here. But I think that Texas is very interested there. I don't think anything's going to happen with him until Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We might start hearing more things come out. But right now, I've got nothing new on Dakario Davis or any potential defensive back for Texas, unfortunately, or fortunately. Maybe that's the way Texas wants it right now.
And we've had this question asked quite a bit. Sark After Dark, well, on Texas, develop your own star rankings. Jerry, I'm going to let you take this one.
Well, look, I give those guys a ranking based on what, you know, I think when I see the guys play, see them in person, all that. I don't know if we're going to do a 1 through 100 ranking, anything like that nationally. We'll figure that out over time. But I am going to give you all a pure opinion on, you know, where I think a guy is. And look, we've both been knowing this a long time. So I can see if I see a kid say, okay, being part of national rankings for over a decade, this guy's been top 100 level player in the country. When I just watch guys, see those guys, I'm going to give you all an accurate description of where I think the guy is. We have an On Texas Football five-star, four-star, three-star. We label those guys such, but one through 100 rankings, I don't know. We'll see that over time.
And Jerry, I'm going to let you play host on this next Super Chat and read the question.
Oh, hold on. Did Marshall beat you up too much when you're sidelines at NAC? You never mentioned us being an O. Yeah, no, look. When my dad went to Nacogdoches, I believe one team made the playoffs. I'm not sure when that switched over to two. But if you think about that district, it was Texas High, Pine Tree, Longview, Marshall, Lufkin, Nacogdoches, Tyler, John Tyler at the time, Tyler Lee at the time. I mean, that district was unbelievable at that point in time back then. And no, you know, I got ran over as a ball boy on the sidelines, but I've thought about who that was. I think it was Mark Moore from Nacogdoches who was one of the hardest hitters you'll ever see. Went on Oklahoma State and was an All-American out of Nacogdoches. I'm pretty sure I was a young kid. I got ran over once, but no, I think the Marshall guys felt sorry for the little kid and dodged me.
Hey, if you don't remember, Marshall played Aldine MacArthur for the state championship one year. Yeah. The star of that, one of the stars of that Marshall team was one Odell Beckham Sr.
Yep.
Odell Beckham Sr. Wow. was a running back on that team.
So Michael Sproul said that 83 was when it went to two teams. So think about that. So I think my dad got the Nacogdoches in 81. So for 81 and 82 seasons, they might have had two or three teams ranked top 10 in the state, and only one of them made the playoffs. So while are we overboard with four teams making the playoff nowadays? Because I do think on some level it's a money grab. One team was crazy back in the day. I mean, you could literally have a state semifinal game the ninth week of a high school season in your own district. That's how crazy. I mean, you just think. I'll name those teams again and think about one team making the playoffs until 83. John Tyler, Tyler Lee, Lufkin, Longview, Nacogdoches, Texas High, Marshall, Pine Tree. Oh, sorry, guys. Only one of you gets to make the playoffs.
Yeah. Think about telling Duncanville and DeSoto, who's in the same district now. Great, hey, sorry, the winner's going on.
Nobody Cedar Hill goes to the regional final or regional semifinal. They wouldn't have made the playoffs.
Yeah.
Think about being in Katy or North Shores district all those years and only one team making it.
Yep. Or the old Southwest Conference, right? The little Southwest Conference, they called it. Midland, Lee, Permian, all those years, one team made the playoffs. That's crazy.
Well, while we're on the subject of high school football, we'll take this question from Marco. What's the best Texas high school football state championship game that you've ever seen?
Man, I hate to do it to Reggie Samples, but, well, the Hail Mary North Shore over Duncanville was an unbelievable game.
Yes, sir.
That was an unbelievable game. I'm not sure. Plano East John Tyler is the craziest high school game of all time, but that wasn't a state championship game, I don't believe. But that game, for those of y'all that have never seen the documentary, you can look it up on YouTube, The Final Minutes. John Tyler and Plano East game was unbelievable. Bobby, I'm sure you remember that game with the kick returns, the onside kicks. There was a couple of injuries that were impactful in that game. But how Plano East came from way back, I think it was that game was crazy.
My favorite personally was Drew Brees' senior year. And I know it wasn't necessarily a tight game, but we saw two great, truly great players playing at a high level. Not only was Drew Brees just, I think at one point in that game, he was 18 for 19, something ridiculous. And the running back for Abilene Cooper was a young man named Dominic Rhodes, who originally signed with Texas but didn't make it into school. Ended up going to like Midwestern State and then ran for 1,000 yards in pro football. There's a reason that I felt like that game just stuck with me. It was more of a learning experience for me. I did not rate Drew Brees high coming out of high school. And because I had seen him at a summer camp, where he was 5'11", 6 foot tall, and he was going up against these guys that were 6'4" and 200 pounds and all this other stuff. And I was young back then. I was relatively young. And that game has always stood out for me because it showed me as much as anything believe your eyes more than you believe stats or numbers. And I know he had great stats, so that's not really the point about stats, but my eyes told me Drew Brees could throw the ball on a line on a 15-yard out as well as anybody in the country. Yet he was only 6 foot tall. He was only this. That's like, you know, why is Byron Murphy so good? He's only 6 foot two, Jerry. Yeah. You know, he's only 6'1" and a half.
Yeah.
You know, believe what you see. That's why I always
a couple of things. People are, but this is great for the chat, guys. Kyler Murray's comeback against DeSoto was unbelievable in high school. Yes. I want to add a couple of these, not in the state of Texas, but craziest game I've ever been to. And I'm not talking necessarily the absolutely on the field, was Miami Northwestern and Miami Central at Traz Powell. That, Bobby, may be the craziest football game you ever go to. I'm just here to tell you, down in Miami and Traz Powell. That was a that is an event. I'll also tell people about the craziest game I ever went to wasn't anything to do with the game. It just came back to my memory. I was at Deerfield Beach, I think it was 2015, and I was on the visitor side, and somebody fired a gun at halftime on the Deerfield Beach side. Somebody fired a gun in the air, and you saw an entire stands go shift from one side to the other as people exit. And I was just standing on the opposite sideline, and I didn't even know what to do. I was kind of just like speechless because it literally looked like thousands of people just going, whoop, getting out of the stands and leaving on one side. But that's probably the craziest high school game I've ever been to. I'll say that.
I think one of my favorite ones from a crazy standpoint, and not because like something crazy happened, but just what happened pregame, is when Shiloh Christian came to Texas, what, about 14, 15 years ago, and they talked all that trash about how Texas high school football is nothing, and they were ranked like top five in the nation, and they were just going to put it on all these Texas boys, and they played Euless Trinity, and I think they ended up losing by like 60 points. And so that was one of my favorite crazy moments in Texas.
They got introduced to the power run, is what they got. They played Euless Trinity.
That was when Steve Lineweaver was still at Trinity, and man, I mean, it was over before it began. Really, it was awesome. So, all right, guys, we got time for just one or two more questions. We got to get out of here. We'll do this one. Chris Young says Texas coaches will keep some aces up their sleeves until the Michigan game. What can you guys see as hiding on defense until that game?
I think odd fronts, more odd fronts, 4 to 5 man, more 5 man fronts, maybe. I don't necessarily think it's Kendrick Blackshear. I'll just be blunt about that, because I actually think Anthony Hill, probably a better downhill linebacker. I'm not so sure David Benda isn't better as well at this point. So I'd say more odd fronts.
And then our last one here is from Chris Young. If Barron plays corner, who wears the headset on defense? Do you feel like it'll be Anthony Hill?
I think either Hill or Benda, maybe. I'm not so sure it shouldn't be him anyways. I don't think the corner needs to necessarily, or the star needs to be doing that, because those guys can be. I'm surprised that more people just don't stick with the inside linebacker. I really am. I don't see the star or a nickel being that guy, because they could actually be, I mean, look, they could be motioned out to the opposite side of the hash. Linebackers could be too, but you can chain before you actually know the alignment. You're not going to have that as much. I just think it's going to end up being one of the linebackers. I really do.
Okay, guys. Well, that's going to do it for today's episode of Coffee and Football, presented by Texas Electricity Ratings. We want to thank them, along with South Point Dodge, for sponsoring today's show. Anything coming up later, guys, that people need to be aware of, whether it's on the side, on the channel, whatever it may be?
Yeah, we're going to CJ Vogel and I are going to do a recruiting breakdown this week live at noon today. May have a special guest. Really going to go over portal. Coaches on the road, hit on recruiting, most importantly, take you guys' questions. So that'll be noon today. Recruiting breakdown will be live here on Texas Football. Maybe have a special guest.
I also want to mention that please consider a subscription to On Texas Football. Become an OTF OG for just $39.95 right now. You get $20 off if you use the code OTF OG at ontexasfootball.com. We had a couple articles this morning. CJ's got some stuff coming out today. It's where, I mean, we can't do a video every single minute. So if you want to be in the know, as well as part of a community of like-minded Longhorn fans, please give us a chance to visit and go there on texasfootball.com. Use the code OTFOG right now, $39.95 when you use that code for an annual subscription, or $5.95 a month. Just give us a try. See if you like it or not, and we appreciate it.
There you go. Okay, y'all. And we also want to thank Eric Galco for joining us today as well from the Shrine Bowl. That was awesome. Got some good stuff from him for sure. Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you for the super chats and the great questions. As Bobby said, head on over to ontexasfootball.com to further that conversation. If you haven't already, be sure to hit that like and subscribe button. Definitely appreciate that. Ring the bell so you're notified anytime we post a video or go live. That way you don't miss a thing. So for Bobby Burton and Jerry Hamilton, I'm Blake Monroe, and we'll see you tomorrow morning.
Hook up.